Proudly presented by Provident Payments, this is Hometown Heroes, celebrating everyday Americans who answer the call of duty.
And so, in this poignant hour, I ask you to join with me in prayer. Almighty God, our sons, pride of our nation, this day have set upon a mighty endeavor, a struggle to preserve our republic, our religion, and our civilization, and to set free a suffering humanity. Lead them straight and true.
That was President Franklin D. Roosevelt on June 6, 1944. You can link to his entire prayer at hometownheroesradio.com. And next year, on the 78th anniversary of D-Day, the nonprofit group Friends of the National World War II Memorial plans on unveiling a new addition to that memorial, a plaque capturing every word of FDR's D-Day prayer. When the president said, "Our sons," one of the men he was talking about was Vito Mastrangelo. The son of Italian immigrants, Vito lost his only brother, Bert, who died in India during the war, but Vito would also carry out one of the most sobering duties that any of those more than 150,000 Allied troops had to endure on the longest day.
I had one squad on that landing craft and a few extra men that I didn't know who they were. So we got to the edge of Normandy and we were just circling around. Finally, a destroyer came after us. He says, they need that bulldozer on the beach. So that's why I landed on the beach on June the 6th, early afternoon. Spent the night soaking wet. Every inch of my body was wet. And spent the night there on the beach in an old German trench. I hate to talk about the early time there on the beach, but it was terrible. But it was a distraction to see a body on the beach, incoming troops. Those all had to be cleared out of the way, with my little squad. I want to mention my company was 607th Graves Registration Company, 3rd Platoon. There's four platoons in the company. As a third, we landed there early afternoon.
I want to make sure I'm hearing you correctly. So as you're heading over, and you've got these men that you described, and you told us they told you you needed to go in because they needed the bulldozer.
Uh-huh.
So you know, before you even step ashore, your job is going to be taking care of guys who've been killed already.
Yes. Yes.
How did you feel about that?
I didn't think too much of it.
Yeah?
It was a job. You had to do it. But all these memories do come back. And they did come back 50 years later.
Because you went back physically.
That's right. For 50 years, my folks didn't know what I did.
Mm.
I never did tell them.
Wow.
They never asked, so I didn't say nothing. And I think that's mostly GIs did the same thing. I don't think they talked about the war to their folks.
It's been my experience just in interviewing hundreds of vets that most of them will say exactly what you're saying.
Yeah.
And the reasons they usually give are, one, I didn't want to be bragging about it.
Yeah.
Two, which I'm guessing applies in your case, there were so many who didn't come home.
That's right.
Including your own brother and all those guys you buried over there.
Absolutely.
But from the get-go, your first experience of war is clearing away dead bodies so more troops can come ashore?
Especially on a beach.
You just had to move them out of the way?
You had to pick them up.
And then what do you do with them?
We would have a special place. We had tents, put them in a tank. You had to keep them away from the eyes of incoming troops.
So you didn't want the guys coming in to see how many had already been killed?
No.
Wow.
No.
So this is, in one way, logistical to make sure there's space for troops to come ashore and vehicles. And maybe even more importantly, this is a psychological move that you don't want guys to be thinking, hey, that's going to happen to me.
That's right.
So from the time you hit the beach, that's what you're doing?
Yeah, my men were doing.
I'm just trying to imagine what that feels like, because you're...
And I was 20 years old.
Can 20 you imagine? Years old.
20 years old. I had 25 men with me, and that's what we did. Later on, as the battle moved on, some of those men were ordered to all emergency hospitals. They would tour those every day and pick up who didn't survive the day before. Some of the sites you can't talk about, even to this day. War is hell. Some of the sites were terrible. The guy that shot, you know, it's terrible to see him. But there's situations that some of them had horrible deaths. Like I said, it's been over 70 years. It's still on my mind. Terrible situations I've seen. It bothers me to this day. You never forget. Especially, we lost 18 men on what they call a dry run a few weeks before in the English Channel. That was shut up for over 50 years.
This is Exercise Tiger you're talking about?
Right.
Yeah.
They were 758 were killed by German PT boats that night, and 18 of our men were gone.
And you were there?
Luck of the draw again. I'm 3rd platoon. We didn't go out that night, but the 4th went out that night.
Wow.
They got shot up. Just the luck of the draw.
And a lot of people still have never heard about that, but what you're saying, even though that happened before this invasion, the government kept it quiet.
Oh, yeah, for years.
And no one heard about it for decades.
For decades, that's correct.
But it was a big tragedy because here are the Allies practicing an invasion. The Germans show up and pick off hundreds of Allied troops.
That's correct.
And that would have been you if your platoon had been called.
I knew some of those guys at the 4th platoon. Some of those guys, their wives were pregnant at the time. They would tell me. And those children never seen their dad.
And here you are 20 years old processing that.
Yeah.
And then you hit the beach at Normandy. And when you say things that you see over and over again, I don't want to make you share any details you're not comfortable with, but what you're talking about are the way some of these guys were killed, the conditions their bodies were in, and then I imagine just the magnitude of it, how many there were. Am I on the right track?
You're on the right track, right on. Yep.
Did you sleep that night?
No. You know, that first night on the beach, they said, okay, there's a German trench over there. Jump in that trench. You stay there all night long. It was an L-shaped trench. The leg of that L-shape followed the beach, and I was on the turn of the L. During the night, we got strafed. People that were lying in the beach. The next morning, I reached around the corner. I says, hey, how are you doing? I didn't hear a whisper from him. And when the sun came up, he was gone. Just arm's length from me. There again, the luck of the draw.
So German planes had come over at night and just strafed the beach.
Yeah.
And you heard it and saw it, I'm sure.
Oh, yeah.
And you knew it was coming close to you.
You hunker down and sure.
But it wasn't until the morning that you realized how close.
Yeah, that's right. Within 3 feet from me.
Wow.
Yeah.
Welcome to the war, Vito.
Yep.
Holy smokes. And if that wasn't enough, tell us about what you had to do on June 7th.
June 7th. Well, we started a little temporary cemetery right on the beach. And here comes a big old general. He says, we're not going to have a mass grave here because he's seen the bulldozer. It was a lot of sagebrush. We had to have that cleared off.
Right.
We had the troops dig in 6 feet down. It was easy digging, mostly sand there. But those bodies were moved later on in a week, at the end of the week, moved up the temporary cemetery that everybody saw on Private Ryan up on the bluff.
Right. But for that day, you probably spent that whole day overseeing the burial of hundreds of Americans right on the beach.
Right on the beach,
458. 458 dead Americans.
I got a picture of that. Somebody shot that picture a few days later, and somebody sent me that picture. It's in my files here.
Uh-huh. Were you just numb to it all, or did you feel the weight of that?
You have to. It'll drive you crazy. What for? What for? We would have wives come and visit the cemetery. They were in uniform. They'd cry out. They had a hard time, too. Oh, my God. So much. When I went back to one of the cemeteries, the guide there was a Belgian man. He was in the Belgian Air Force during the Second World War. He trained in Arizona, so he knew the English language quite well. He says, I want to show you something. We went to the office. He went into his private office for some paperwork or stuff. And there happened to be a book on that little table. And as I opened that book, opened this page, there's a picture of me. This was a staged burial. Myself was in there and another fellow named Kistner, another Herbert. Kistner was from California. The other guy was from Illinois. They snapped that picture. And as he came out of the office, he started crying. I says, what's wrong? He says, the only reason that picture's in that book, because all the moms and dads that would come over here, they wanted to know if they were buried in just mud or something like that, or dirt or something like that. Well, I want to let you know that they were buried at that time in mattress covers. They were tied. It was a symbol that we had to do. We didn't want to do what that general said. We don't want no mass graves here. Mm-hmm. They weren't. So rest your mind, folks. They weren't. They were well taken care of. I know this day they're packed in ice and brought back. It's a different story now. But that at that time, there was no refrigeration for us.
So the best that you could do is get them in a mattress cover and get them in the ground. Did that mean something to you to hear him say
yes,
that photo,
yes,
just that photo,
yes,
provided comfort for families?
Absolutely.
That probably changed your perspective on what you did or why you did it.
That's right. I know I'm proud of what I did in the war. I know I talk a lot about the war stuff. A lot of people couldn't take it, but somebody had to do it. Everybody didn't fight with a rifle. There was mailmen, and there was cooks, and there was truck drivers, and I had a carbine over my shoulder all the time, mm-hmm, but I never fired it one time overseas.
I've got to ask you, you described June 7th and temporarily burying 458 on the beach. At the time, you have no idea what June 6th is going to be,
that
we're going to be talking about it 70 years later.
Absolutely not.
But now with the benefit of history and knowing how pivotal that day was in the world, how should those 458 guys be remembered? What's the significance of their sacrifice?
Those people were the first ones to die in France. I still remember them and how they were taken care of. But I have really no solid way of describing my feelings, or do I want to?
And that was just the beginning for you. That's the day that gets the headlines.
And 80,000 later, the last guy that died. Yeah, my company of 125 totals about 80,000.
That's how many your company buried.
Yeah, and there was maybe 8 or 10 companies in Europe doing the same work. You know, I think I've said too much.
No.
No?
Never. But I am curious, knowing how painfully aware you are of the death that's happening, where you are and on the other side of the globe with your brother passing away. Were there ever times when you'd have one of these close calls where you thought, boy, somebody must be looking out for me?
Absolutely. You know what came to mind? I would say to myself, I'm too young to die. I just keep repeating, I'm too young to die. I haven't seen nothing yet. Those are the words that came to my mind all the time. Mm-hmm. I'm too young to die.
Vito Mastrangelo is now 97 years young. He was recently surprised with a special 97th birthday parade in front of his home in Visalia, California. And the stories of those 458 Americans he buried are now part of a collection we can all access on this 77th anniversary of D-Day. Every one of the 2,502 Americans who perished on June 6, 1944 is included. We're going to tell you how to find it and how it came about when Hometown Heroes comes right back after this.